Hello, good people. Welcome to our show. Hello, bad people. Welcome to our show. Hello, everyone who want to learn more about technical optimization. Welcome. I'm so excited to learn more today with Nick Ranger. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you. Not too bad. Greetings from Melbourne, everyone. It's 1 a.m. currently, so...
I'm so sorry for that.
I'm up late.
It's not the first time.
But hey, man. It's all good. It's really, really exciting to talk about this with a lot of folks out there. There's a lot of people that are sending messages, a lot of interest about this. So I'm more than happy to take the time. And I think I'm going to try and like dispel as many myths and give as much good information as I can.
Awesome. Awesome. You know, when my team can invite you to my podcast, you know, I always tell them, please search the way when Nick is in Europe or any other place in the world. Because, and they reply, they don't know how to catch you, you know, because you always travel, you know, always in many places. I check out your LinkedIn profile. You post all these photos, you know, with different places from China, you know. So, yeah, excited to learn more about that.
Massive shout out to Shenzhen SEO Conference in it was fantastic. I think a lot of people in the Southeast Asian APAC region really should go to it. I think it's one that really tries to make sure that all the talks and all the insights that are shared are from really, really great minds in our industry. And wow. I think there was so much great discussion that I think anyone, doesn't matter your level, where you're at from beginner all the way to, you know, 20 years in the game, I think everyone sort of walked away from that, you know, having learned something or had an amazing experience. So yeah, massive shout out to that. Also shout out to Women in Tech SEO Festival. It's going to be held here for the very first time in Melbourne. And I can just say, like, from all of us here in Australia, we're so grateful and we're so excited to do that. So so that's coming up in November. Tickets are available. Please come along. We got lots of people flying in from all over the globe, and it's going to be an amazing time. So awesome. Yeah, massive awesome. Shout out.
Yeah, I'll shout out in my post. So yeah, send me the link. I will share with my audience. So can you tell, from my experience in China, they don't have Google, they don't have many services, platforms that we know, like Facebook, ChatGPT, but do they have the same technical stuff that other websites have? Why China is interested, to learn about common SEO?
The ecosystem of search over there is very different, but I think there are a lot of brands in China and also the surrounding areas that are very, very interested in what's happening with Google and Bing. I think when you're thinking of China, you think scale, you think industry titans. I think there's a lot of global brands that have started and have really taken an amazing global foothold. So they're really, really interesting and asking the kinds of questions that we are over here in the West, particularly when it comes to AI visibility. And I'm really, really wanting to talk about that this podcast, because I think a lot of people are really wondering about the two main questions, like how are we currently getting impacted by AI and how to influence the models and recommend their brands and the results. So I think, like, coming from that sort of perspective, I think the there are a lot of brands in China who are just as interested at that as we are.
Awesome. Yeah, got it. Yeah. So someone asked why Nick Ranger doesn't respond on LinkedIn. Because you didn't personalize your message, you know? So, guys.
Oh, boy. Yeah, look, you know what? I'll just say right now, like, I apologize. I'm trying really, really hard to get to all the messages. Coming back from China, it was such an amazing experience. And there were so many wonderful people there. And I pretty much said to everyone, if you have a question, please reach out to me. I will do my best to get to them and, at least unmask things. Because I think, you know, this is so new for a lot of people. And, for my team, and very much like, you know, we're led by Dan Petrovich, who's a lead architect who forges a lot of our tools. Like, we're all on the ground testing this, and we're all, you know, thinking about this. So, you know, I think one of the two main questions I think people have, like I said before, like, you know, currently how you've been impacted by AI, and like, how can you influence the model? I think for like how you're influenced by a model is such a really, really great place to start, with, you know, just how you've been impacted. Cause I think that teaches you a lot about what to look for and what to understand when you're working with training models that, that, you know, we've had to build to sort of, I think, understand this a lot better. When it comes to saying like, how have you been impacted by an AI model? You know, with all the results, like, I think, you know, there's three main signals in my mind. But it's like, the first signal is like, when you're typing in a result, you know, is there a presence of citations? I think that's the clearest signal, because if an AI overview, for instance, like contains explicit links or numbered citations pointing to like live web pages, it's a clear indication that retrieval augmented generation, RAG, and, you know, if you've seen that, that's what that means, was used. So the model has actively fetched external documents to construct its answer. I think the other signal that's really happening there is real-time information. Like I said before, we do a lot of testing, and we test queries where the cost of staleness is infinitely high. So, you know, asking for like the today's date or the current prices of a stock or the source of a game that's just ended, you know, those kinds of things, like, you know, they're all really sedimented in time. So if the model answers that correctly, then it must have processed a live external data source. So that to us confirms like a grounding process.
Nice. And, nice.
Yeah. Grounding and ungrounded is such an interesting thing to understand. And like, you know, the third sort of like, I said three signals, but really I think they're like, you know, the main two signals, but the experiments we run around that is like doing like response variability testing, like, and then like an ungrounded response, draws from a static pre-trained model. So that should be highly consistent over time. Like a grounded response influenced by dynamic SERPs will exhibit a lot more variability. So we conduct like controlled experiments where we want to probe the same query. You know, we first, like, we tested daily for a week, and then we tested like every like once a week. And then like over a month, just to see like where the sweet spot is. But yeah, if the sources cited and the nuances of those answers change in like SERP fluctuations, that to us is a really, really good instance of grounding. So I've really kind of gone off tangent there to sort of talk about this, but honestly, when it comes to like, you know, understanding how you've been impacted by AI, like, I think that's really, really what I'm saying.
Yeah, got it. Nick, you know, the last time we spoke in 2023, 2 years ago, and at that time, Google ChatGPT was not a big thing that we have today. Yeah, that was good hype, but as you share now, AI search can become a thing. You know, many people started to speak more about AI search. And when you share about all these experiments that you make, it might confuse me a little bit, and I can't agree with everything. So it doesn't mean that I'm right or wrong, you know. So what I can see, things are changing fast. You know, for example, when Google updates algorithm, it doesn't impact everything. Yeah, it impacts some percent of websites, pages. Algorithm can catch new pages because can feel that this page is better for ranking, anything like that. But in AI search, things change dramatically. I mean, according to data, like 40-60% of all searches, results can change in 1 month. So it's like 50%. I analyzed another study that in Google AI overview, 70% of results can change in 2-3 months. So dramatically. I mean, like, if you make these experiments, you can find something that can work now. Yes, correct. But things can change tomorrow, in the next week. And how to handle? I mean, like, okay, you found some issue that it's better to do for AI search to get results, but how to update all your experiments all the time to check out? So tell more about this process.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know, that, because I think, you know, there's a lot of studies out there. And I think when we were talking last, I said, like, oh, these two new studies came out, like, this is really, really interesting information. And at that time, we didn't necessarily have a methodology of our own to be able to create that. And, you know, what I was sort of saying before, like, with Dan, being very much the architect and forger of all of our tools and does a lot of the information. I mean, anyone that follows Dan Petrovic knows that he really is at the coalface of this stuff. But I think, think it's like in March of 2025, like there was like 58% of respondents saw at least one generated summary. And, you know, the impact of that is really, really changing, because AI generated summary, like, you know, is that impacting, like, you know, what we would used to see with featured snippets, like now becoming AI overviews? Is that impacting, what's happening in the people also ask panels, where you're seeing your amalgamated answers in there? Are you seeing it, like, how much traffic is coming through? From what I was saying before about, like, those two signals that, you know, sort of look at citations and real-time information, and a lot of the experiments we've done it, Dan has actually pre-trained a model to identify when a query is grounded. So have a look, and there's an amazing blog that he's written up about it. But query deserved grounding classification is what we do with Search Console data. So this basically tells us how many queries are actually impacted by grounding.
But how do you feel it's better to play for a long game? I mean, like, for example, I follow Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a very good expert in digital marketing, and he shared many times that he doesn't care about SEO. He cares about human beings. And I think all these algorithm updates are going to this direction, to satisfy humans, I hope. I don't know. So, and how to play? I mean, like, if we chase something that works today, but things change fast, what you can advise to do? I mean, like, to play in the long run, I mean, like, to forecast what to do, what can happen, like, in 1, 2, 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, this is the golden question that a lot of people, that everybody's asking. Like, everybody's like, well, how do I get influenced by the model? Like, how do I just change and evolve in the way that, like, search has evolved? Like, how do I approach this? And I think, you know, this is exactly where SEOs can make a huge impact. I think the single most important strategy for winning grounded answers, and like I said, grounded answers is what queries that you've been impacted by an AI model, whether it be ChatGPT, Gemini. I think we sort of like call it content enrichment. Like, it's the core philosophy of it is pretty simple. Like, you just mean to make your page the absolute best, the most comprehensive cheat sheet on the topic for that specific answer. What we've sort of done to really, like, think about, like, the database, like, you know, all those different queries of what the AI model could possibly find you for, what that's called is actually query fan out. And originally it was like a research technique, but it's more of like a strategic content modeling process that we've used to fundamentally look to engineer a single document from a machine's perspective. So the most logically complete and authoritative source on a given topic. Mm-hmm. So essentially we're trying to move away from optimizing pages for keywords and towards optimizing pages more for topical authority. So, like, that's exactly what an AI is looking for in its grounded source. So that's exactly in the way that you can be able to optimize to be able to get suggested by an AI model. Mm-hmm.
Do you think keyword research is obsolete today or becomes obsolete soon? What do you think?
Yeah. Traditional keyword research is often leads to like topical fragmentation. So like one article for like what is X, another for Y versus Z, and a third for like how to implement X, right? Like an AI being an efficient engine prefers to cite a single canonical document that holistically covers the subject matter. Query fan out is the methodology that we use to architect that definitive document. So we start with like a high level parent entity, like core head term, whatever you want to call it. Like that's really critical to the business, because again, we think about prioritization, you know, what's going to have like, you know, the biggest biggest ROI with this action. So for like a B2B SaaS client, this might be like cloud data warehouse. So we use a fine-trained large language model to fan out from this seed entity and generate a comprehensive list of related subqueries. So all of these are synthetically created, like when we specifically prompt for different intent types. So like what is a cloud data warehouse, Snowflake versus a BigQuery versus Redshift? Like how do you reduce data latency? Like how do you migrate from a on-prem to a cloud warehouse? Like all of this raw output can be thousands. And you know, for clients of ours, like we've generated anywhere from like 600,000 to 7 million of these based on whether or not that they currently rank for it. Because again, like if we're doing all the work to do a query fan out, we also want to see how much of that real estate, like that market share that is understood and sourced by the AI model that's relevant to you to be suggested by, how much do you actually currently take in that market share? Like that's what I was like, well, how are we currently impacted? What does it look like for competitors? How do we get suggested, right? So we use like embedding models to map these queries into vector space and then apply clustering algorithms. That groups the raw fan out into semantically coherent clusters, and then they become the core sections of our content blueprint. So yeah, I think even Dan is like generated a query demand estimator for one of our clients by actually pre-training their own data on this. And again, like, you know, we try and build things custom to clients that need a specific, you know, we wanted to get, you know, extra granularity from this, and they're really interested to really have a very fine-tuned, very hyper-specific to them and a quicker pathway to getting like the cleanest and most valuable data. But yeah, like it goes pretty deep, and but that's exactly how, you know, we look to do it with like content enrichment essentially.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. You know, when I check out then articles in your blog, you know, it looks like Matrix, you know, from this movie. He shares a lot of infographics. By the way, I can show something on the screen. For others who can listen to this podcast on Apple, Spotify, Google, I share the link in the description below, so you can check out how Dan can visualize all these things, you know. The same with Matrix. I don't know how he can read this, but he can.
Yeah. Well, that's just a picture. I think like a picture before, like you can actually read the article. Dan writes all the articles, because like I said before, he's the architect and he's building and forging all of our wonderful tool set. But, you know, I just also want to say to people out there, like, you know, who are listening to this and really trying to wrap their head around a lot of new terminology that I've just dropped, hey, go check out the article. I try and like spell it out as easily as I can, but also like show how it all fits into the bigger picture. Love visualizations. But this does require time to wrap your head around. It is very new. It doesn't cover, I think, traditional aspects of SEO in the way that we know it. My career has now had to really expand and learn machine learning and natural language processing, really just to understand that, hey, like what, like how does a sentence get constructed and delivered, you know, when a user types it? Doesn't matter whether it's in Google search or in Bing search, or in any one of these chatbots with ChatGPT or Google Gemini, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does it actually construct that sentence? And understanding those things, at least for me, from a technical perspective, is the best way that I could be able to approach content and having a really deep understanding of how, like, what it means to create this, what the purpose is for, how we should, from what perspective we should see this, because every single word has a tokenistic probability of preceding the next. And I think that's something that is just not a part of our thinking or language traditionally. So mm-hmm. for anyone that's really taking a bit, like a beat and being like, well, this is different, mm-hmm. it's okay. We're all in this together. We're all in the same boat. We're all learning this, but I'm just really saying, like, from what I've learned from shadowing Dan Petrovich and learning this on my own and doing my own testing, you know, this is what I think is really, really helpful to understand as you're going forward and wanting to test this and build this out for yourself, actually how it works. And hopefully, like, in the way that I've explained it, it makes some sense.
Okay, I got it. Okay, Nick, I have a bunch of questions, you know, according to your explanation. So basically, okay, how to transfer all this knowledge, skills, your experiments to clients? Let's imagine clients who have no experience with SEO, but know how to write, how to create content according to user intent, to their target audience. But how to tell them that you need to create content not only for humans, but to cover all possible AI chats, AI search, search engines, anything that we have today. To satisfy both target audience and algorithms. What do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a really, really challenging thing. I think we've learned from working with clients that we can't just, give them large CSVs and then show them the raw output of the data. Some clients we can absolutely do that, and you know, no surprise, these are the most wonderful elite teams that run. You know, they're the reason why I think they're in the number one in their industry. They're always on the cutting edge. They're always really super keen to learn and work with us, and basically cut the competition.
I'm sorry, how does it look? It's like checklist or what is it? I mean, like, you explain to clients.
Oh boy. Sorry, I haven't worked with a checklist for so long. Oh boy. I'd love to have a checklist. My goodness. No, it's like I said, like when we've generated like the output of query fan outs, like one of the most important things is for us is to have a look at what's in there and, you know, figure out what's the best thing to do. The way that I've tried to tackle this is by looking at, you know, key modifiers in there. So, the what is, how to, why is, how does, you know, blah, blah, blah. Little modifiers between all of the query fan out results so I can, like, you know, see how many there are, what kind of questions that are in there, or, kinds of queries that maybe programmatically I can create something. I think Canva is a really, really great example of doing programmatic SEO really intelligently. And this is the same kind of methodology and thinking that I would love to be able to apply for query fan outs, because the level of thoughtfulness and care for every single different type of template that they create is hyper specific to the intent. And I think that that's really in the way that we need to think about this. Like, we need to create this not necessarily for the AI model, but for the end user. And that has never changed. So when we're displaying this and, you know, when we're working with clients, really it's kind of like having to have these kinds of ideas, like, you know, for the one I gave, for example. Do they have the team to be able to do that? Do they have the resources to be able to implement that in the way that I think would have the greatest traction? Creating templates can be very, very timely and costly resources. So we want to really work with the teams, have a really good understanding of what they have at their disposal and how we can kind of be clever in the way that we approach implementation. Because I think at the end of the day, the one that's the most creative and has the greatest understanding of its target audience, the user, from just using this database of created synthetic queries that we know that are being that you know are going to be used by an AI to be able to find your brand, they're the things that we wanted to prioritize. They're the things that that's just the database that we want to use for this idea, like, you know, to be able to find the I used that word before, so I'm talking and I'm trying to like think about the exact word I used before, but nonetheless, I think that makes I think if I haven't explained it like clearly, like, you know, what's
yeah, yeah, I got it. No worries. Okay, Nick, I want to ask about the future of SEO blogging. I mean, like, I remember when I started to write my blog post, that was in 2011, when Google updated the algorithm with Panda. And before this algorithm, we didn't write any blog posts. We just wrote commercial pages. Google ranked well with any user intent. Today, I mean, like, after Panda, when this algorithm can recognize user intent, we started to write a lot of blog posts. And we did it like for, I don't know, I can't count the number of blog posts, probably plus 1,000, you know, for different clients, and we got million traffic of that. We did all this job with copywriters before EEAT in 2019. Then we switched all our attention to experts who have writing background. We started to cooperate with them. But some experts, like Tim Solo from Ahrefs, who say that blog content can be, SEO traffic to blog content can be dead like in 3 years, because ChatGPT, AI search, AI mode can replace all blog articles. And we can see today that traffic is going down to blog content. But I see you still write a lot of blog posts in your blog, and you didn't switch the strategy. What do you think about the future? Do we still need to write blog posts? And if we need,
I had this question.
Clients.
Yeah, I had this question come up in Shenzhen, and I was kind of shocked at this question because. Mm-hmm. This fundamentally misunderstands the way that search works, the way that AI models surface and suggest information that is important for us to be in. Like, blog content is still wonderful real estate for you to be able to own all of your informational and commercial and transactional and navigational intent, like if you want to sort of like pull that, like it's like where you can be able to intersect each one of those. So it could be both informational and transactional in that particular type of intent. You like having a blog is so essential still, and I don't understand this. To be honest, like Tim's always fantastic, and like with Ahrefs, like they're doing amazing cutting edge work. So I would check that, because I really don't think that that's what he's saying. I don't think if he is saying that, I don't think that's the intent of what he's trying to say. I know Tim, like he's a really, really lovely and intelligent guy, and who I think has a really good understanding of the way that this works. So I really would be surprised if that's what he's saying.
I can like, find this information.
But I'm just saying, like I fundamentally disagree, but think about it. The AI's job is to synthesize information from multiple sources. If it can find all the necessary information clearly laid out from one single page, like a blog page, that makes its job exponentially easier. It's so much more efficient and less risky for the AI to rely on one definitive source to piece together an answer from five different potentially conflicting ones. Like, you know, the goal is to create that definitive source. Like I spent a lot of hours writing that blog, and I really wanted to like curate the intent. I really wanted to make sure that every single thing was very, very well understood.
Yeah. By the way, I found this post from Tim Sola on LinkedIn. So, and he wrote, in the next 3 years, AI is going to kill informational content as a marketing strategy. And honestly, I couldn't be happy about that. So,
I was trying to maneuver the screen. I mean, in the next 3 years, AI is going to kill informational content as a marketing strategy. And honestly, I couldn't be happy about it. Because what is your typical informational content strategy? Pick a popular keyword, look up who ranks for top 10, pay a random copywriter to create a more in-depth piece of content, buy more links to trick Google into thinking that your page better than others. Thousands of websites were flooding the web with nearly identical content and the same topics. I agree, that's absolutely happened. No new information was produced in the race to dominate Google's rankings with your generic page. So then Google thought, if all the websites are basically stealing content and rewriting it. So scroll down. Okay, stop. Brilliant. So there's no reason to create 389th ultimate guide to, because the chances are you don't have anything new to add to the common knowledge on this topic. We're entering the age of original content. So I just want to just say, like, that's not, like, what you just said is absolutely not what he meant. Like, what he means to say is there are, like, this is the way that people used to do it, and they're just creating content for the sake of creating content. And that's not useful because it's bland, it's generic, it doesn't raise the ships, it doesn't create anything new or unique. It's just recycling the same tired information. And that is useless. And I absolutely fundamentally agree. What I kind of say, like, about the user is, because, like, I'm not just saying, like, you know, spin up like a whole bunch of questions and answers. Like what I was saying before, like with Canva, and the reason why I look to them as like a differentiator in this market is because they've considered for every type of intent what is actually required of that page, and have made something unique and separate and really thoughtful for these templates. And I think that's kind of like where you want to go with this. Like, they're not just like, you know, using like an AI model to spin up like a bunch of content, slap it onto a page and be like, yep, tick box, you know, we've satisfied this on query fan out. No, like, they thought exactly about the specific intent of which someone is asking this question and delivering a page experience that directly answers those questions and points you in the right way. I think, and that's so much work. But that's what actually makes a difference. And they have like 190,000, I think, pages that are in index, or I don't know, it's something large. And 190,000 is really small. I think it's like 190 million or something. Canva are huge. But they have all these pages indexed because the user engagement on them actually has traction. Have a look at your Search Console, have a look at your Google Analytics and tell me if they actually have any real people going in and using it. If they don't, it's trash and it's not useful. So that's what Tim's trying to say. That's really the core of the message. And I really, really agree with that. I love that you found that, because I think you'd be like, whoa, that's not what I said, guys. Like, you know, don't take it out of context.
Yeah. So, and, I can find another post. I remember that he shared that the era of evergreen content can be dead soon. So he said that probably he's assuming that we are going to the way PR can work. So when you have this newsroom where you can share some posts, and evergreen content, I mean, like, for example, like ChatGPT or AI mod can reply to the questions fully. Even if AI mod can put links to the resources, it doesn't mean people will click these links, you know, so they can become like trust issue. And we can see today that clicks are going down. So I think I understand your point. I completely agree about having. I think if you like to write, if you bring value, it can help anyway. So SEO is not only one channel, even in that way. So, for example, I can write my blog post because I have newsletter on LinkedIn with 42,000 subscribers, and I can distribute content to different channels, you know, newsletter, my blog, email newsletter, and I know people need this content. So if I don't get any SEO traffic, I still get this attention. But if someone can write any content for the sake of getting SEO traffic, probably it's not good strategy. I mean, like, if you can't get traffic from other channels, I'm not sure it's valuable. It can bring any values, because many websites still have the strategy. Okay, I need just to get SEO traffic, you know, to sell my products. But you need to, like, work with many different channels. So I think like that.
Nick, I just want to say, like, if you said, like, you know, there's no such thing as evergreen content, it very well could mean that everything is like, you know, searching. You know, there are specific algorithms that specifically find updated and current information, and it has a preference over that for when query demands freshness. And that's actually something that you can Google and read a lot more about, specifically query demands freshness. So that could very well be what he means by, well, technically, by that definition, there's no such thing as evergreen, because evergreen implies that it's created once and then it just kind of sits there. I think in the way that, I don't really want to go through another post, if I'm honest. Like, I'm just going to tell you, like, you know, what I think that Tim would have meant by that. Because, like, you know, like, he's not really an absolutist kind of guy. I think he is very thoughtful and cheeky with his posts, but there's a lot of nuance that comes there. And I think when folks are reading this, like, you know, think objectively about, like, you know, what is the hardest thing to do in SEO is usually the answer of what to do in SEO. This stuff is hard. And I think a lot of people are trying to look at these aggregated, like, studies and results and, you know, look at, like, how to kind of take a little bit of a quicker pathway, because, you know, we're always looking for, you know, the key takeaways, like, you know, the dot points, the things, but not actually using our brains to think laterally about how it applies specifically to us and the way that it happens. So we're kind of like making decisions on kind of aggregated incorrect interpretations of information. So,
Nick, okay, let's leave blog content. I want to ask more questions about technical optimization, your strong side. I know that because I follow your content. And the last time when we spoke, we had this small talk, and you shared that you and your team create tools for your clients, for yourself. And I think it's a good strategy, by the way. I mean, like, today, when we have AI, why we don't need to compete with AI if we can use these models in our tools, you know, to provide for clients? And I analyze many pages with tools like calculators, converters. They don't lose traffic like blog content. Blog content can lose some traffic, but tools are fine. I mean, like, they still have this demand, attention, and clicks from search engines. Can you tell what kind of tools do you create for your clients and for yourself? I mean, like, what kind of difference between tools for your clients and why do you create these tools for your clients?
Well, every client is different, and I think there's a lot of things that have to be built, because sometimes the size of the clients that we work with are so huge. So, for instance, like, Alibaba is a client of ours, and just the HTML list of URLs is 600 gigabytes. For anyone that has a really appreciation of huge corpuses of data will understand the momentous size of that. That's just URLs, mm-hmm. nothing else. No titles, no meta descriptions, no H1s, nothing. Just URLs. 600 gigabytes. Huge.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that scale, we have to think differently. And in that instance, Dan created quite literally a search engine around their data, so we could be able to do lookups of their URLs and their data and have a lot more of a considered probe to their massive site, so we can be able to have a better understanding of how to be able to split it out and analyze patterns within that. Machine learning, natural language processing is very much at the core of how we do things. So breaking things down into vector embeddings and being able to use cosine similarity and basically translate it for a machine. So there's a whole Swiss Army knife of things that we can be able to do with that information. Query classification. So being able to classify different search intents in a way that's hyper-specific to the client. Mm-hmm. Like even looking at pre-training their data alongside with AI model data so that we can have an understanding what is really hyper-specific to the client, like an idea of a search volume for query fanouts. It's really, really hyper-specific to the clients that we work with and their size or their complexity or they want to have... to be able to answer these questions and actively do something about it. So because of that, we all build our own tools. I build a lot of the technical tools that I think, take these insights and extract page types out of that, look at it from an international lens, look at different frameworks and infrastructure and analyze patterns based on templates, for instance. A lot of things we can do from that particular lens. But yeah, there's a huge toolbox box. But we have Dan actually, I think it was a few days ago, released a list of these tools. So you can be able to see all of the tools that we use that we have shared publicly, because there's mm-hmm. a lot that we haven't.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, I'll check out, guys. I'll put the link to this list so you can check out as well. And yeah. I have my final question, very important question. I think for newcomers, I mean, like for someone who wants to join this niche but not sure about the future of this niche, because we mm-hmm. often get this question, SEO is that? And I sometimes agree. SEO is that for lazy marketers, for most websites, because 96% of websites can't get organic reach. Of course, it's that because they can't get this organic reach, but 3% still get a lot of traffic sales. I have these questions, from people who want to join SEO companies like interns, but they can't because companies today are looking for ways how to replace simple job with AI agents. Yeah, we can see today, like, for example, even Microsoft laid off 9,000 people, IBM laid off 8,000 people, and we made a study that 65,000 people lost their jobs because of AI. And it's really tough to join these companies like Microsoft, IBM. Mm-hmm. You need to become smart, they just invite smart people. And even if these smart people can lose to AI, that means a lot. And today what I see when small, medium-sized companies are looking for ways how to use AI agents to replace interns. And it's tough for newcomers. So, Nick, let's imagine you started today. I mean, like, forget about your technical optimization skills, forget about China, about all your conference that you speak. So it's your first day in SEO. And what will you do to learn and jump on this niche when nobody wants to hire you?
See, I think I think about myself, way back in the day when I was an intern who was looking at like the tasks on the list, and I was like, I have no idea why I'm doing any of this. Like, I really don't understand. I think having a curious mind and just a kind of tenacity to answer just the question why, I think is a really underrated weapon that people can be able to forge within themselves. I think as long as you have that and you have the willingness to try and to fail and to try again, I think really that's the grit and the tenacity that all one needs to be an SEO. I would highly encourage you to look around and follow people and ask some questions and see who's like the smart people in the room and see what they say, and maybe go back and test some things and just start to learn and just be trying to test and to do some of the things, or asking how in the way that you can be able to do them. I think that's what a mark of what makes a really great SEO. I really love what I do. I wouldn't say that I'm extremely the most wealthy person out there. I make lots of money for clients. Like, we made $2.2 billion in revenue profit for a client last year. And we're set on target to break new bounds for them this year. But I don't get a share on that. I'd love to. But I think, how you succeed in any job is or any industry, especially when you're starting, just be curious, try things, be comfortable with failure, because everybody who you look to has failed 1,001, a million times, trying to do exactly what you're trying to do right now. And the only thing that makes them different from you is that they were just like, I'm just going to get up tomorrow and I'm going to try it again. Yeah. And they learn something about it. They share what they have learned about it. The only reason why I do conference speaking or, go to any of these places is because I'm always still looking for someone in the room that's going to say something that kind of stops me. I'm like, what do you mean by that? Can you explain, what was your experience? And I'm fascinated. I was so fascinated to go over to Shenzhen and just see how a completely different search ecosystem works for billions of people. I think that is really the collective things that I think you need to just go from A to B. And awesome. No matter what that is, that will always pay in dividends. I assure you, I'm living proof of that. I'm not a particularly smart person. I'm not a particularly...
I disagree with smart.
Look.
I know.
I'm just saying, I really have struggled to get my head around this when I first started looking into this. And it's all that I have to go from one place to the next is I just am curious. I want to know how it works. And I want to talk to people who've tried something that I've never tried before and see what they say and, kind of forge the next pathways. What really excites me about working here for Dijon and with Dan and with Mike and Blake and Martin, an amazing team of people, is that we get to solve crazy, crazy hard problems. The kind of problems that people are like, I just have no idea. So who on earth could solve that? And, that's a really, really cool reputation that we've earned. And I think it's a really cool thing. But really, I'm just I just don't know. And I don't know until I try. And I think, that kind of gets addictive after a while, because I think you can really surprise yourself and you can really sharpen the saw so quickly by just kind of always pushing that envelope a little bit by I'm going to work on this site because I've never worked on Magento 2. I've never worked on a Shopify site. I've never worked on an international site. I've never worked on Alibaba, who has quite literally billions of pages. to analyze and a whole litany of infrastructure problems. Like, it's just like, you know, what's the next cool thing and what haven't I done yet? Like, and if I haven't done it in a while, like, what haven't I done in a while to, like, really make sure I remember that and, you know, understand how to do that. Like, I just think, like, if that's the way that you approach it, in like, it just becomes exciting and it becomes like a drug. So awesome. I feel like start with curiosity and reward it, feed it, and it can really, really completely transform your life.
Yeah, nice. You know, very motivational. You know, I'm going to cut this part, you know, and share with my audience now, because, you know, you motivate me so much, you know, with this last part. And summarize, you need to love what you do, become curious, and be willing to fail. From my experience, I failed a lot of times. I keep failing every single day, you know, because how to go ahead if you don't know? I mean, like, if you don't want to break generic stuff, you need to find out how it works. So failure is part of the journey. I failed many times. I made very terrible mistakes in my life because I didn't know. I mean, like, with these skills on special stage, I didn't know what to do. So if you don't know, then try, and failing is part of the process. Love it, Nick. I'm going to cut this part of episode and share with my audience again, because they will love it. Nick, it's a big pleasure to get on my show. Always welcome back. You know, next time let's try find time when you will be in Europe. Next time, I will wake up in the night, you know, and we will have this conversation. Thank you so much. A big pleasure.
Thank you so much, and everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And please subscribe to Unmiss. There's amazing podcasts with a lot of incredible minds. I think that this is always a really great opportunity to learn. You can always reach out to me on LinkedIn or WeChat. I'm more than happy to have a conversation and just, you know, keep the fun going.
Thanks. So you set up WeChat in China or before that?
WeChat's now a part of, like, my main communication driver. So,
Nice. I need to try this. I heard many times, but I never used that. Okay, guys, I recommend anyone to follow Nick Ranger on LinkedIn. I'll put the link in the description below. So follow, because you can see a lot of valuable insights. Any updates, I will post with my social network as well. Thanks a lot, Nick. A big pleasure. Welcome back anytime.
Thanks so much, guys.